The following presentation is brought to you by Priority One.
I think that in any discussion of the Seder, there are one issue which is always an issue, and maybe even sometimes a problem, is that we may be talking to people who are not yet parents, maybe talking to people who think they have children that they cannot yet communicate with, although I guess that the communication really starts at a very young age. And therefore it's hard to do something which is equally beneficial to everyone. But I think there are some general principles of making the Seder more meaningful, and I think that it's not only the responsibility of the husband, the father, the man of the house, but it's something that every participant, since it is it's supposed to be a very participatory experience, that every participant can really help to make it come alive. And therefore, I think no matter what the age group or status of our families, I think that there's certainly something that's relevant to everyone. In fact, it seems that the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, telling over the story of what took place in Mitzrayim, both the difficulties that the Jewish people had and the Yetzias Mitzrayim, the going out, the exodus, I think that it seems that the issue of telling it even to our children is not only for the benefit of our children, but it's rather for ourselves as well. Because the truth of the matter is that the greatest inspiration that we can get as parents is giving over something to our children. Because then it's real. The assumption has always been throughout Jewish history that parents don't lie to their children. Today some of the kids think it's not true, but we'll just ignore, that mood in modern society. But basically, when a parent tells over something to a child, it's real, it's serious, I'm giving it over to the future. So if nothing else, even if the child does not fully get the message, but it strengthens us, because we have imparted this lesson to our most precious acquaintances, our most precious people, our most precious things that we have, our children. So certainly it's supposed to be beneficial for them as it is for us. And I guess the real trick is what Chazal said when they told us, Chayev Odom Liroi Sesatzmoi Ki'ilu Hu Yotzo Mi Mitzrayim. Some say even kihilu hu, be'atzmo hu, achshav hu. They make different languages there. But a person is supposed to view him or herself as if they themselves had actually left Mitzrayim. As these great events, these miracles, this from slavery to freedom in moments, actually happened to me. And it actually happened to me, not only in the past, but as if it's happening to me in the present, to make it real. And I think that's really the key, that the Seder has to be a real experience. It has to be with the enthusiasm, with the simcha, with the cheshek, with the passion, as if I'm telling over personal events. And not just personal events that happen way back, I'm very old, but I remember from my youth, 100 years ago, these things took place. But no, it's as if they took place now. It's as if it just happened. It was yesterday, it was last year, it was very recent that these events took place. And that generates, or was supposed to generate, a very serious, high level of enthusiasm. Now, the enthusiasm doesn't come by turning on the enthusiasm button. Most people don't have an enthusiasm button. It's something that we have to psych ourselves up for. It's something that we have to prepare for. It's something that we have to get in the mood and arm ourselves with information and insights and ideas and stories that can really generate enthusiasm. And one of the things that are, of course, to tell this to women Erev Pesach, I don't know how that one is supposed to work, or maybe if you're going away or something like that, but it's to do a little homework. It's to try to prepare thoughts which focus the appreciation or can focus the participants on the appreciation of what actually took place. And I think, although it seems that there is it's possible to contend that one can fulfill the mitzvah of telling about the Yetzias Mitzrayim by studying the halachos, because it seems they were oisik in Hilchos HaPesach until it came the morning, but at least according to some. But for our purposes, it's more than just divrei Torah, but it's more inspiration. It's more stories. It's more vividly relating the events that took place in a way that they become exciting, in a way that they are beneficial and they become relevant. And I guess, you know, one of the, I guess the areas of focus should be, first of all, the extent of Shibud Mitzrayim, the extent of the slavery. It wasn't just a, okay, we have to work, we have a 9-to-5 job, it's a little bit tedious, and we work, we come home at night, then we relax, but it was a slavery that was something beyond what we can possibly comprehend today. Imagine working, doing anything that a master asks me to do. In those days, the electronics were non-existent, and all the technology was non-existent, so we're talking about slave labor. And then the minute I come home, my neighbor feels free to ask me to do anything. Not ask me, excuse me. Command me to do anything that they feel that I should be doing until the middle of the night or until the next morning. And this goes on and on and on. And this was a story for 210 years of suffering and living under such conditions. Now, if we have some sense of how bad it was, we can then develop some sense of appreciation of what took place. I think maybe even more critical is to vividly imagine and portray to ourselves and to those that are there with us some of the miracles that Chazal tell us took place, some of the miracles that millions of eyewitnesses, and there were millions of people, by the Torah's account, there were a couple of million Jews, and this is before Makas Choshech, when so many died out, so there must have been even more millions. And besides that, the Mitzrim, and by the way, there are historical accounts. There's a famous papyrus, Ipur, I don't know how you pronounce it exactly, where they decipher the hieroglyphics, and they analyze the comparison between the sequence of events that the Torah tells us in terms of the Makkas and the eyewitness bemoaning of this Egyptian, in terms of how they parallel and show that he was actually suffering these very things that the Torah tells us took place in Mitzrayim. So, but realizing the extent of the miracles that took place is something that makes it very real, that makes it very vivid. And we all know, but if we're talking to children, it's certainly appropriate. And if we're talking to ourselves, it's also appropriate to review. Because the review is not just saying over that which I heard last year and the year before and the year before and the year before, and which I know so well, but it's focusing, it's pondering, it's thinking. Imagine a Makas Dam where a whole land, all of the water is blood. Okay, that's bad enough. All of the Jewish water, whatever a Jew has water, whatever he owns, whatever he buys, whatever comes to him, whatever comes his way, it's fine, water, no problem. Not only that, they, you know, some wise guys, I guess, must have figured out, I'll go drink the Jewish water. Doesn't help, it's blood. Got a better idea. I'll drink the Jewish water from the same cup that the Jew is drinking his water. Strained plate cup, no tool, no magical pieces, you know, holding half water. He's drinking water, he's drinking blood. all from the same cup. Picture that. What that really is a graphic picture of the creator of the universe. This is creation. HaKadosh Baruch Hu rules this world. He is the creator. He is in control. And he exercises such minute and intimate control. You know, it's one thing to be involved in this dramatic splitting of an ocean. It's another thing to be involved in the cup, in the glass that's going on, you know, that I'm drinking from, and my next door neighbor happens also to be drinking from, and this is going on with millions of other situations all at the same time. It reminds me of a story I think I once heard from my mother-in-law about a woman, an almona. She was supporting a big family of 10 kids, and she used to support them by selling bagels. She would go every day to the marketplace with these fresh bagels, and she would try to sell the bagels. And one day, she spent the whole day in the market, and she didn't even sell one bagel. And it was getting dark already. She had to go home, and she was a little bit distraught. And all of a sudden, somebody comes running by and says, "What have you got in the basket?" And she says, "I got 25 bagels. That's exactly what I need." And he buys all the bagels from her. And she's going home, a happy woman. And on the way home, she says, "Rabbeinu Shalom, you're so busy with so many more important things in this world. Where do you find the time to look into my little basket to see what's going on for me?" That's the lesson that we can take from the cup that was water to the Jew and that was blood to the Mitzri. We see the Rabbeinu Shalom. Not in one, not in two, not in 10, not in 20, not in 50, not in a million. Different situations all at the same time. Personal concern for each individual. Not too busy with all that was going on those days to look inside the cup of each and every person to see what they're drinking and to assure b'derech nes golui with a blatant miracle how he's drinking water and he's drinking blood and it's all the same. And we could extend it. I mean, these are all famous things that everybody knows, but let's picture it. We're sitting in this room, and all of a sudden, the room is half light and half dark. We can't even comprehend such a concept. And how does it break down? Well, Mitzrim, if you're an Egyptian, you're frozen in pillars of darkness. You can't even move. The darkness is so thick that you can't even move. You're a Jew? Right? You see all the stuff that he has hidden over there too as well. The same room, the same day, or the same night. The creator of light, the creator of darkness, and he controls them. And he controls them not only in every room, but for each individual in that room, be it a Mitzri or a Jew, he has light, he has darkness, and I imagine that if the Jew was here, and the Mitzri was here, the Jew was here, the Egyptian was here, the Jew was here, the Egyptian was here, there would light up, light up, light up, light up, light up throughout the room. Picture such a thing. If we can stop to focus, to picture, I don't know, maybe somebody should draw some drawings and show them, pass them around at the Seder. But look what took place. And remember, we're talking about 3,320 years ago. Millions of eyewitnesses who testified to these events, recorded these events, passed them down to their children, the next generation, and the next generation told the next generation, and the next generation, to this very day. The Seder has been going on from now all the way back to the Leil Yetzias Mitzrayim, and the story has not just been passed on as folklore, as what's that game? Is it a broken telephone or telephone? You tell somebody something and they tell someone else. And by the time the story gets around, it's a whole different story. But it was the identical story. Millions, billions of Jewish people throughout the generations, throughout the millennia, each telling the same story. And not just getting their kids together to tell the story, but eating the matzah with the props, the Korban Pesach, the Moror, all of the events of the night, reliving, actualizing the events as if they actually happened to us, as if they actually happened now or last year or immediately. Such power. And this is really what we have and what we've been the recipients of and what we have the responsibility to continue, both for our own benefit and for the benefit of future generations. To take it just one step further, I don't know, for some reason this is like one of my favorite medroshim. The Chazal say that in the Makkah of Arbe, the locusts ate the plant life. So once again, it wasn't just plants owned by Jews and plants owned by Mitzrim. What if, I don't know how, but what if they got into a partnership? So you had this pig tree owned partially by a Jew and partially by the Mitzri. Well, so Chazal say, if the Jew owned the roots and the Mitzri, the Egyptian, owned the branches, then the branches would be devoured and the roots would remain intact. And what happens if the Jew owned the branches and the Mitzri owned the roots? The roots will be devoured and the branches will hang in suspension. Trees standing in midair. Imagine walking through Mitzrayim, seeing partnerships with the trees hanging in midair. Hashkocha protis. Lo yu'umen ki yisupa. Things that we don't really imagine today. And the Ramban tells us two things that are critical to remember. Number one, he tells us that the Yitzias Mitzrayim, you know, I guess he doesn't mean it exactly that way, but I like to say it this way. The Odom Harishon slept late on the day of creation. He was created late in the afternoon. It's not his fault. He woke up right before Shabbos. The world was created. No eyewitness testimony to creation. It waited 48 years until Mitzrayim, Yitzias Mitzrayim, 2,448 years later, when millions of people were able to witness creation. Because the powers of Hashem that were demonstrated in Mitzrayim were literally the powers that forged creation. So now we have eyewitness testimony to creation. But the Ramban says something else too. The Ramban says that the Nisim Gluyim, those blatant, obvious miracles that no one could possibly even deny, could attempt to deny, that we witnessed in Mitzrayim, served as a teacher, served as a formula for insight into the extent with which Hashem does miracles for us in our own lives. The Hashgocha Protis, the Ramban calls them the Nisim Nistorim, the hidden miracles that take place in every person's life every day, which the Ramban says if we do not recognize them, then we don't even have a chelik in Hashem's Torah, because that's the essence of what Torah life, of what Torah hashkof, of what Torah living is all about. Hashem's intimate involvement in every aspect of our existence. And if we can use these blatant miracles and we can extrapolate from them a lesson of looking for the miracles in our own lives, it's a whole different story. I'll never forget the first Pesach Seder. We were engaged right before Pesach, and I spent the first Seder at my future in-laws. And Seder was underway, it was in Eretz Yisrael, and somewhere sort of towards the beginning started the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. My father-in-law, Zecheinu Livracha, began to reminisce about how in 1940, he was probably the last Jew to traverse Europe from Germany all the way to Italy to get a boat to go to Eretz Yisrael. And he started telling stories of miracles. It's a whole series of 10 events that were nothing less than miraculous. I think we sort of forgot about Mitzrayim for about an hour or two and sort of were transposed to Europe during the 1940s or 1940 in Europe. But it was so powerful, because what we really were saying to ourselves and to whatever children were there listening, although they probably had heard the stories before, is that Hashem is truly involved. We live in a history, we live with a history that reenacts itself in different ways throughout all generations. And when we come to recognize that, and we can witness what's going on, and we can see the Hashkochas Hashem in our own lives or in the lives of the people around us, it gives such a chizuk in emunah. That's really where the strength to remain a Jew comes from. We know that the mitzvah of Zchiras Yetzias Mitzrayim really stems from a posuk that says, Zochor es hayom hazeh sheyetzosem mimitzrayim. And the mitzvah is constantly to remember. It's to remember all year long. It's to remember all the time. We say by day and by night in Kriya Shema. And it's to tell over the events with a special presentation on the anniversary of that event. But the strength to appreciate it all the time comes from the vividly actualizing, reliving, experiencing, discussing in all its extensive and miraculous detail these events on the night of Pesach. So this really can provide for us a tremendous source of strength, of chizuk, and when we look back and realize that we heard this from our parents, who heard it from their parents, who heard it from their parents, and not just one of us, but everybody throughout, and not just this group, but throughout the Klal Yisrael, wherever there are Jews all over the world, and the same story, they all trace it back, and kim'at, I think this is the only observance that hasn't really broken down, even amongst people who are no longer observant. I still remember the friend of a friend, a little kid who was bragging about taking his ham sandwich on matzah on Pesach when he went to school, because he don't eat bread. It's not shaykh. That message has been given over generation after generation. In fact, most of us have celebrated many times a Seder with three generations, parents, grandparents, and children, which means not only do I have it from my parents, but I've actually checked out my parents' sources with their parents and see that, oh, this is not a story they made up. This is the story they heard from their parents. And if you're worried about maybe someplace over there made it up, well, how come everybody is telling the same story? How come that the Manashevitz Haggadah is the same as the Haggadah that was in Tehman, and the same as the Haggadah that was in Germany, and the same as the Haggadah that was deep in Russia, and even in Ethiopia? I remember once bringing the Ethiopian chief rabbi to speak for a group of people, and also they were separated for something like 2,000 years, and a lot of things happened to them, but same story. Has such power, has such impact. But there are other aspects to this Seder experience as well that I think that are worthy of some note. Coming to or focusing on for a moment children, it's very interesting, and as our children grow and get older, it's interesting, it's important to communicate to them the fact that the mitzvah of the evening is really addressed to them. V'higadeto lebincho. The Torah wants us to strengthen ourselves as well, but it tells us the children. And the children are really the focal point of the Seder. We are instructed to rush home and begin the Seder as soon as you're allowed. You need the three stars to come out, but as soon as you're allowed to begin, so the kids shouldn't fall asleep. We're instructed to give them out some kinds of tchotchkes, or they used to give out nuts and things, whatever they had, to make sure that they don't fall asleep. The Manishtano is the highlight. I just heard, we went to be Menachem Oval, someone in Lakewood, and who grew up in the Mir in Yerushalayim, and she says she remembers the whole family made the Seder with Reb Chaim Shmulevitz. There were 75 people, and he was makbid. Every single child had to recite the Manishtano. I don't know what time they did anything else, but you know, it's the child, it's the children. It's all about the children. And I'm sure, I don't know if I ever saw it any place, but I'm sure that this seemingly not so Jewish activity of stealing the afikoman is also part of just keeping the kids awake and keeping them, you know, going through the whole Seder rather than just falling off asleep someplace. And it's all about, they are the focus. And not only for us to know, but to them to know how important they are, how precious they are. But there's something else about their preciousness, which is also very important. and that is they're precious as individuals, not as a generic group. The Torah tells us four psukim which speak about the telling over Yetzias Mitzrayim. And those four psukim, Chazal Darshan, are keneged arba bonim dibra Torah. Each child with his own personality, with his own individuality, with his own uniqueness, has to get a separate message. The same message, but a separate nusach, a separate venue, repeated, recited in a way that it will best penetrate this individual, he or she, that they will best understand it. And that's exactly what we have to do. So it's about the children, and it's about communicating with the children, and it's about communicating with them individually in a language, in an approach, in an engagement that they will understand, each one according to his or her ability, capability, nature, and so forth. Very important. Very important for the message, and very important for the kids to feel that importance. And by the way, something which I think I have not lived up to too well personally, don't forget to get the Afikoyman presents. You know, when you promise something, you gotta get it. Otherwise, there'll be Yotzo Schora Behevseda. I think 1 year I paid up for many years together. I think my kid may have been married by that time. But anyway, I don't know.
I think you paid through the grandchild.
I paid through the grandchild. Oh, I didn't even pay up by the kids yet. Thank you very much. Anyway, this type of a thing is, it's very important that they get that message, how important they are. That they are the center of this event, and they are critical and crucial to what's going on. But there's even more that they're involved. Because we don't talk to them. We don't talk to them. They ask. We do move the car off the table and other things just to get them to ask. Because we want, not only should it be towards them and about them, but it has to be with them. They have to be engaged. If they ask a question, they become part of a captive audience. Ah, you asked a question, and now we will give you the answer to the question. Now, many of us, sometimes in the rush to eat the knedlach, which is also very, very important, no one means to downplay that, but sometimes we tend to think that it's only those four questions that the kid may not even know what he's really asking anyway. But when the kid asks a real question, we have no time. That's the teaching moment. That's the moment of entree into the neshama. So we have to be aware of that. It has to be an interactive experience, and the natural interaction may even be more significant to respond to than the scripted interaction of the manishtana, which they might say in French and in Yiddish and in Hebrew and in English and in Russian and in whatever. They don't know what they're talking about. You know. But this idea, a question, the kid has a question, that's it. This is a chinuch moment. This is an entree into his or her soul. And we really have to take advantage of that, because that's really what conveys the import, the message, the power of the moment. I think there are a number of other things which are also significant. Just to mention a few. Strange concept. Four koisos. Chazal say, Keneged, the Dalad Lishenes, the Arba Lishenes, Shel Geula, the Tseisi, the Tzalti, the Goalti, the Lokachti. The Torah says, describes the redemption in four stages. I will take you out. I've taken you out. Redeem. Take you out, save. Redeem, v'goalti, lokachti, take us to my Har Sinai. And the Sukkunu explains that there are four stages of the Geula. The Lohitzesi refers to the Hafsokas HaShibud on Rosh Hashanah time, they stopped working, even though they only went out 6 months later, but the actual Avodas Perech ceased on Rosh Hashanah. Then comes Pesach, they actually went out. Then that's the Yitzalti. V'goalti, the redemption really only came by the Yamsuf, because it's only when they saw their oppressors drowning you know, their enemies, their masters drowning, that they were actually convinced that they were redeemed, because until that point they thought they would still be pursued. And v'lokachti tamayim in har Sinai. So we take four krisos, k'neged the four lashonei shalgula. So one might say, very nice, four krisos, four children, four, what else, four? That's all the four.
Four questions.
Four questions, you know, there's four, a lot of fours. It's much more than that. The Chazal understood that if we wish to appreciate the events of Yetzias Mitzrayim, we can't lump them together in one Kiddush Kris. Oh, Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim. That's a whole year. But tonight we have to dissect it into its component parts to appreciate each aspect of the Gula. The Hafsukas, we stopped working. If we only would have stopped working and we never went out of Mitzrayim, Dayenu. That would have been enough to thank Hashem. At least we're not working anymore. We're not slaving anymore. And if we only would have gone out and not witnessed our oppressors drowning in the Yamsuf, Dayenu, that would have been enough to thank Hashem. And if we witnessed them drowning and He didn't take us to Har Sinai, Dayenu, that too would have been enough to thank Hashem. Alachas kamo vekamo teivu chvulim chupeles lamokim aleinu. How much more so do we have to be thankful for everything Hashem did? And that's really what that whole Dayenu is. Each one, not that one would have been enough without the other, but each one would have been enough to say the fullest of Hallel and praise Hashem. Alachas kamo vekamo, all of these things together. And I think that it's very important for us, and very important for our children, and very important for everyone, to recognize the benefits, the kindness, the chesed, the hashgocha that Hashem does for us in its smallest component parts. When we think in broad terms, shkoyach, thank you very much for everything you do for me, it's meaningless. But when every pleasure has its own brocha, when every aspect of the geula has its own koish shel brocha, we ki'ilu say a hallel on each aspect individually, then when we add them all together, we can truly appreciate the conglomerate of all of these parts. And I think that's also a lesson that that we have to teach, we have to be able to teach our children, to appreciate the chasodim that Hashem does for us in their individual parts. We make a brocha, zeikif, matir asurim. That's a brocha, Chazal tell us, just for the ability to sit up on the bed before even standing up. Zeikif kefufim, for the ability to stand up. Mechim mitzadei gover, for the ability to actually walk the steps. Roika oretz alamoyim, that we actually have ground, earth, firm earth, that we're able to walk on. Every aspect of the chesed Hashem is to be broken down into its component parts. And don't forget, we had a good friend, a former student in the yeshiva, who unfortunately had a tragic event in his life many, many years ago, and he was shot 12 times. Rahmana Litzlan spent 6 months in hospital and rehab. It was a Baruch Hashem today, he's as good as new. But in the process, never forget the phone calls where he called me up one day. He couldn't move. He looked like a mamish emaciated by the time a couple months went by in the hospital because he was lying in bed. He couldn't move. And he says, I sat up on the bed today for 2 minutes. That's the Baruch Matir Asurim. A week later, he calls up. I stood up for a minute. Zeikif kefufim. And then 2-3 weeks later, I took my first 2 steps. It originally, the brochas were instituted as we perform the acts. When we sit up on the bed, matir asurim, when we stand up, zikif kifufim, when we take the first step, meichim mitzadei gover, so forth and so on. But eventually, we said, the hands are not washed, and this, it became too complicated, so Chazal will mesader it, meseder ha-brochas. But the idea of dissecting and focusing on each individual component of Hashem's chesed that we learn from the Dalit Krisis is really critical, not just to recognize miracles, but to appreciate them. And it's really appreciation that we have to have. Because if the goal of the Seder and Yitzias Mitzrayim is to create a sense of appreciation of our responsibilities to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The shibud, rather than to paroi, but the shibud to Hashem, the responsibility that we have to fulfill the mitzvahs. The Chovas HaLevavos tells us that there's nothing more powerful in inspiring us to the fulfillment of that responsibility than the recognition, the hakaras hatoyv, the appreciation of all of the kindness that Hashem does to us. If we can fully feel, and you can only feel by dissecting it, by focusing on each component individually, if we can truly feel that chesed, that creates such a sense of hakaras hatoyv, such a sense of appreciation, that we just look, we crave for things to do that we should be able to interact more with Hashem. It's very important for the Seder to prepare not only stories, and not only be responsive to questions, but to prepare questions as well. Especially for our children, because lectures, as interesting as they may be, they're limited. How long can people sit and listen? But an interactive discussion, question, I ask a question. If they don't ask a question, I have a question, and an answer can lead to the most amazing things. And that's how we engage them. I'll never forget, we had a very, I guess it was a different experience. One year in California at the Seder, when we invited, for the second Seder, I believe it was, our neighbors from across the street. It was a couple and two children, I think Trisha and Chad. I think those were the names of the kids. Anyway, so they were both in the local day school. The parents, you know, didn't have too much religious background. The kids were studying in the day school. We invited them for the Seder. And for some reason, I don't recommend this as the best question to ask, but for some reason, I don't know why I came, I asked the question, I said, how is it that we had to go out of Mitzrayim at such a speed? Why did that final geula, when it came place, when the moment came, they couldn't even wait the, I guess, 18 minutes to bake the bread? It had to go out. The time has come. This is the moment. Out, Paro chased them. The same Paro who wouldn't let them go, despite so many makas, all of a sudden he's chasing us out of Mitzrayim. He can't wait another 10, 15 minutes. Why did it have to happen at such speed? So I'll never forget, Chad says, I know. He must have been 8 or 9 at the time. So he says, the reason is because we have to eat matzah on Pesach. The reason the Jewish people had to go out of Mitzrayim so fast was because we had to eat matzah on Pesach. Now, Chad's father was not a learned man, but he knew enough to know that his son had it backwards. We eat matzah on Pesach because we went out of Mitzrayim quickly to remember, to relive, to actualize it, to make it real. This is the matzah that they ate. They ate that night. They ate it in the shibud. They ate that night. They couldn't wait. It couldn't rise. They couldn't have bread. We're reliving the story. We're retelling it and reliving it at the same time and experiencing it. And this is it. So we eat the matzah because they went out so quickly. Not they went out so quickly because we have to eat matzah. And it looked to me at that point that this brilliant idea that I have of asking questions to stimulate thinking and involve the kids in the Seder did a good job to involve Chad in the Seder, but his father, I think, was regretting all the tuition that he paid at the local day school because his son just couldn't even get a simple basic like that straight. So and this is, I guess, something else we also have to do, in a desire to save the moment, and especially the embarrassment of this kid and the pain and the regrets of this father. So I told him, I said, you know, there was a great rabbi. His name was actually Rabbi Yosef Dov Soloveitchik. He lived maybe 150 years ago, the Beis Halevi. And he wrote a very scholarly work. And in it he says that the reason that we had to go out of Mitzrayim quickly is because we had to eat matzah on Pesach. Of course, he explained it. And he said that the Torah preceded creation. And all of the mitzvahs of the Torah preceded creation. And since all of the mitzvahs of the Torah, and there is in the Torah's mitzvah, a mitzvah of eating matzah to remember the speed of the Geula, the speed with which we left Mitzrayim, therefore they had to leave Mitzrayim quickly because it was mandated in the Torah, because the history had to follow suit, to follow, to actualize that mitzvah which preceded creation, which was that the Jewish people should eat matzah on Pesach to remember the speed of the Geula. So the Geula had to take place quickly, all because we had to eat matzah on Pesach. Chad was thrilled. I don't know if he understood the whole thing. His father was delighted, no remorse anymore for his tuition. I think the mother had a little nachas also. But what it did, a question, I recommend finding better questions, but what it did is it involved everybody in a memorable Seder that I don't think a year goes by, and here we're talking about 20-some years ago, I don't think a year goes by where we don't think about this and remember this, you know, this basic concept and this experience. So I think that that is also something that we have to do. We have to challenge and stimulate and prepare questions to involve and to engage everyone. And it's not only children, because even the adults, you know, sometimes you find a Seder that two or three adults are having a little bit of a conversation, not quite sure about what, and everybody else is sort of, you know, talking about this, that, and the other thing. And it's a pity, because the moment can be so powerful in terms of inspiring and uplifting and strengthening us, and giving us the chizuk that we need to go through the whole year, giving us the inspiration and the chizuk to recognize Hashkochas Hashem way beyond the miracles of Mitzrayim, right down to the very daily mundane details of our own existence, and can create an excitement and a passion for this special relationship with Hashem. I'd like maybe to just add one thought in terms of our relationship with Hashem. It seems that the Seder night is the beginning of that relationship. It's the beginning of relationship between Am Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We were galvanized into nationhood, and we forged this new relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I imagine that in honor of that relationship, the reason that we read Shir HaShirim. Shir HaShirim is read at the end of the Seder, if you hopefully have the strength to do it. And Shir HaShirim is read on Shabbos Chol HaMoed. Shir HaShirim, of course, is the classic textbook of the dynamics and the relationship between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael, given in the moshul of the loving relationship between a chosen and a kala. So this is really what it's all about. But the relationship that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has with us has a very unique twist to it. And in Shir HaShirim we find the pasuk says, Doidi li v'ani loy horoya v'shoshani. My beloved is to me, and I to him, the one who shepherds with roses, I guess, with love, with sensitivity, with caring. And Rashi says something very interesting over there. Rashi says, Hu kol tzrochov loitova ela mimeni. Hashem, all of the things that he needs, he only asks from me. He didn't ask any other nation to bring a korban Pesach except for me. Didn't ask any other nation to bring a korban Ulo, to a korban Tomi, to do anything. Only me. And I, in return, only ask of him. I don't ask for any other religions, any other Avodah Zorah, anything. I only ask from him. I ask you. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is asking us to provide him with his needs. You mean he's hungry at the Seder night? Therefore, he tells us to roast the Korban Pesach on Erev Pesach to feed him at night. That's his tzrochov, Korban Pesach. What's going on over here? And it seems that The pshat is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu so relishes and so cares and is so caring and careful about our relationship with Him that He wants us to feel, He allows us to feel, and He wants us to feel that it's reciprocal. He wants us to ask from Him, and He wants to grant us that which we ask, and He wants to constantly bestow upon us His kindness. But He doesn't want us to feel that it's a one-way relationship. He does everything for me, and I have no way to pay Him back. So He gives us mitzvahs and allows us to feel that we're doing Him a favor. He doesn't need our favors, isn't hungry on Pesach, and doesn't need a korban, and doesn't need anything. But He allows us to look at it that way. Doidi li vani loy. Things that He needs, He asks from me. Things I need, I ask from Him. And that allows us to feel a reciprocal relationship. The Seder has the ability to reignite the dynamics of that relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to feel that connection, as if we're doing for Him on this night, and He has done for us in the past, and He continues to do for us in the future. And if we can allow ourselves to feel that connection, to feel that relationship, it's uplifting, it's exciting, it gives us strength, it gives us courage, it gives us bitochon, it gives us the ability to face all the difficulties of life with a different level of conviction and commitment. And the truth of the matter is that this is not just history. Rabbi Yankov Emden writes in the Hakdoma to his Siddur, he says, I swear by my life that the miracles that have assured the survival of Klal Yisrael throughout the exile, throughout the Golus, and the survival of the Torah amongst the Klal Yisrael, are greater than the miracles of Yetzias Mitzrayim and Kriyas Yamsuf, of the exodus from Egypt and of the dividing of the Yamsuf of the sea. Greater the miracles that have, and we know it's, our existence is miraculous. We've been oppressed by every behold, dur vodur, de malenu lechaloisenu. And Seul Amad the Goyim tells us that really even Lovan was out to kill us. We didn't know it. How many times, besides the ones that are documented in history, have our enemies tried to put us out? And no one was even aware of it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu matzileinu miyodom. And when we realize this, and we see that we are today, we're here. We're celebrating the same Seder for the last 3,320 years. And all of our enemies and oppressors are maybe mentioned in the history books, maybe a little bit of a demonstration, of an exhibition in a museum here and there, long forgotten. And Klal Yisrael survives, and the Torah survives. It's the strength that we draw from the Seder, the Pesach experience, that certainly has contributed in a major chelik to the survival, and may we continue at Bias Goel Tzedek.
Thank you for listening to this presentation brought to you by Priority One. Please visit us online at www.priority-one.org. That's priority-1.org. Where you can download free audio and publications on parenting, teaching, and teens at risk. For more information or to make a donation, please visit us online or call 800-33-4EVER.